The compassion is to come in and go, I'm doing the best I can do today on my 100th Zoom call of the day. And I have enough faith to say the person on the other end of the screen is doing the best they can do today. We're all just trying to get through it.
God.
No. Oh, if you could only hear Rachel sometimes when she's having a bad day. Hey, Warners, welcome to Women Your Mother Warned You About,
the podcast that makes business sexy again by encouraging you to be a woman or man your mother warned us about.
Ooh, what's that mean? Well, you'll find out more on the show. I'm Gina Tremarco, sales trainer and consultant at Pivot 10 Results and founder of Carolina Improv.
And I'm Rachel Pitts, mommy, wifey, and mortgage officer at U.S. Mortgage, the singing lender.
And Keith is not here because he's in a meeting or he's meditating while he's running, because that's when he meditates, which brings us to what we're doing today. Today's episode is on meditation and mindfulness with the most amazing Meryl Arnett, who's a mama meditation teacher and the creator of the Mindful Minute. Oh my goodness. What do you think, Rachel?
She's good. I'll give it to her. To be honest, like when we usually, to be totally transparent, do the interview with the guests and then we come back and do the intro. And when I arrived to this meeting with Meryl, I was super, super stressed. I'm a lot less stressed, I'll say, after delving into the benefits of what meditation can do for you, because, you know, it doesn't matter if we're in a pandemic or not in a pandemic, if you're a mom, if you're a businesswoman or a business person, there's just moments of stress that catch you. And Meryl very eloquently illustrates how meditation can help manage that.
My big takeaway, I mean, there were so many takeaways on this because this was jam-packed with amazing stuff, especially if you struggle with anxiety right now and you're fearful through what's going on at this point. When we're recording this, we're still going through COVID. She said something about resilience, and I didn't get to really respond to that during the show, and I thought I would respond here. She said how meditation improves resilience, and I think that's really important because we consider ourselves women your mother warned you about. And I truly believe that what makes us women your mother warned you about is our ability to be resilient and be able to bounce back. So that, to me, I had never heard about meditation for resilience. So that was a big thing for me.
I think my biggest takeaway is that meditation can help you get through your day without chopping anyone up with an axe.
That was another good takeaway. That, yeah. I mean, she literally said that, you know, if you can manage to not chop anybody up with an axe. So a little bit. And by the way, we actually, Meryl brings us through a meditation in our post show, which you can find at patreon.com/warners. So become a subscriber of that and you can actually experience a 5-minute meditation, especially if you're struggling with that. But a little bit about Meryl. Her meditation classes have been featured on CNN, Headline News, 11 Live and Atlanta Magazine, and her podcast has been named a top 10 meditation podcast, and it is really good. She has been teaching corporate, private, and group meditation classes since 2010, and she co-created Sacred Chill West, the first meditation and yoga studio in Atlanta to offer regular independent meditation classes. So I think you're really going to enjoy this episode. And thanks to our fanboy, Doug. I love that he calls himself fanboy about Meryl. He found Meryl and turned us on to her. And that's how we got her on the show. And we are so, so grateful for that. So
in case you're wondering who Doug is, Doug's our producer.
Yes, Doug. You may hear more from him in future episodes. We've been auditioning him secretly. So let's get on to this episode with Meryl Arnett on meditation and mindfulness. All right, let's get this party started. Meryl, welcome to women your mother warned you about.
I'm super happy to be here. Thanks, guys.
We're so excited to have you here. And we always have to ask the question, do you consider yourself a woman your mother warned the world about?
You know, I think I'm getting there. I don't know if that's an okay answer or not, but I think I'm getting there. A couple years ago, I would have said definitely not. I was for a real long time the quintessential good girl. And it was really the path into yoga, maybe 12 years ago at this point, that started to disintegrate that little good girl lie. And it's all this time, you know, through yoga, through meditation, it's been disintegrating bit by bit. And now I would say I think I am.
Do you think that you were happy trying to be the good girl?
In the moment, I thought I was, right? Because in the beginning, I feel like I didn't necessarily even know that was a lie. I just thought right. I was like doing what I was supposed to do. And I was super good at that. And it wasn't until I started really paying attention to like, how do I actually feel inside? That I was like, oh God, I'm so unhappy. And it took a lot, like a lot of work, years of work to really be honest about that. And then to start to figure out what that meant to actually let myself be happy.
Yeah. I think there's probably a lot of our listeners who can understand that. And it's just so classic of children growing up, trying to be good for their parents or their teachers, trying to do what everybody expects them to do. And, you know, I've heard so many stories of people that try to do what they're supposed to do as far as like becoming a doctor, which is a pretty long process because their parents wanted them to do that. And then finding out that they're totally miserable. And then they go off in the direction that makes them feel more fulfilled, if not happy.
Yeah. And I think, you know, if you're walking that path, I think you have that moment where you think, oh my God, am I crazy? Like I've done everything I'm supposed to do. Why am I so unhappy? You know? And so you have this, to me, it felt like a pivotal moment where I thought, I'm just going to have to admit that I'm crazy and go do this other thing.
I'm laughing because I'm pretty sure I never did what I was supposed to do. Rarely. Like I thought I would try, but it was never turn out that way. And I thought, you know, I was crazy too. I think the bottom line is we're all a bit crazy. And I think that what possibly you're going to bring to us today, Meryl, is proof that everybody has to do something to try to calm our crazy minds.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk about calming our crazy minds, because before the show started, we were both, I know Rachel a long time, so I could just look at her face and know what's going on.
Yeah, I'm not in a good spot right now.
Yeah.
I literally, just to be completely transparent, because that's how we do. So Meryl, I've had this crazy craving for about a week now that I want to smoke a cigarette. I have not smoked a cigarette for probably 15 years and I cannot shake it. Like I went out this morning, I had to do an errand and I got gas and I had to have a 5-minute conversation with myself in the car out loud to not go into the gas station and buy a pack of cigarettes. Knowing that if I smoke a cigarette, it's going to be horrible and a coughing, gagging experience, but I can't. It's so crazy. I'm like a health nut, but that's how far of stress, like it's a stress thing that I just want an escape from my stress, you know?
Yeah.
But it's manifesting in the form of I want a cigarette because I think that's going to help. So that's where I'm at today. It's not pretty.
We can definitely talk about that. I have spent the last couple weeks talking with people about coping mechanisms and the way that they have come out in full force, you know, and your coping mechanism might have been a glass of wine at night, and now it's 5 glasses of wine at night. And we're sort of all, I'm going to guess, all rolling in this place of, I'm seeing how extreme the coping mechanisms are getting, and they're not really helping in this moment.
No. And, you know, for context for our listeners, that right now we are in the midst of COVID-19. If you're listening, you know, once hopefully we're out of this COVID-19 pandemic. And it's just a really uncertain time. And, you know, Meryl, I've been sober for about 8 years. So the alcohol thing is not an escape for me because, yes, I'd be drinking gallons of wine right now. So I think, you know, everybody has, we all want to escape from discomfort, and that's where problems come like that. And at least I have some good tools in my toolbox to be aware that I'm trying to escape from my stress. And a cigarette is a better choice right now than a drink for someone like me, but it's still a stupid choice right now.
And you said the key words, right? Which is you're looking for the escape. And I think that's what so many of us are conditioned to do, is look for the escape. And meditation, the reason I love it so much, honestly, is because it was the first thing that finally taught me I don't have to escape the moment. I'm actually strong enough to be right here, right? And so that's what we're learning how to do when we start to think about meditating, is we're learning just how to stay even in the midst of total discomfort.
Well, I'm curious, Meryl, what got you started into meditation to grow to where you have in your business?
So I found meditation through yoga. The first little foray into finding a sense of myself and a sense of comfort was a yoga practice. And I did a yoga teacher training back in 2010. And I sort of knew in my brain that the whole point of a yoga practice was to be able to meditate, right? It was like working you towards something. And yet my training had no meditation in it. The word was never mentioned. We didn't learn anything about it. And then I was this yoga teacher out in the world and people just assumed I was meditating. So I thought, shit, I better figure out how to meditate. And I did a training in meditation. It was 5 days long, 40 hours. And I left that training and I had no idea how to meditate. No, I was like completely confused and, you know, vaguely embarrassed that I had just done this and still didn't understand it. And so it set me on this, you know, little quest to figure it out, because I felt like, well, if I can't do it, there's a whole chunk of the population that can't do it either. And we have to figure out a way to do this. So I did a bunch of different workshops and trainings and readings. And along the way, it just started to click into my brain. Some of the teachers that really helped me understand what was happening were Tara Brach and Jack Kornfield. They were the first two that really helped me understand what was, you know, quote unquote, supposed to be happening when you meditate. And then I just started talking to my students about what worked for me in my brain, which felt, you know, when I meditated, it just was never quiet. I felt like I was just thinking all the time. I was planning and writing to-do list, and never once did I feel peaceful or zen in a meditation ever. And so I started talking to people about my experience. Like, this is what I feel and this is what I do. And so many people were like, oh my God, me too. That's what happens to me when I meditate. And so I started teaching to those of us that can't stop thinking.
Wow.
Well, and I think that's one thing that when I speak to, I've been meditating a long, long time and it's still poorly, just so y'all know, in the same ways that Meryl just said. And I, that's the one thing when people ask me or we start talking about meditation is that they're like, oh, I'm so bad at it. I just can't quiet my mind. And I'm always like, wandering, my mind wanders off. And I mean, isn't that really the point? Is that's what the mind does. And we're trying to give the mind just a moment. Maybe we get one little moment where we stop wandering off. But I mean, as you just said, Meryl, everybody's mind does that, unless you're like a total Zen master. But I'm pretty sure that a lot of them, their minds wander off as well.
You know, I really think they do. Right? Because that's exactly what our brain is meant to do. Our brain is meant to keep us alive. And that means scanning to the future to look for threats and comparing it to what happened in the past to make sure we're safe. And it's, you know, my mind has definitely never stopped thinking in a meditation. But the thing that has shifted over time is now I see the difference between I am thinking and lost in my thoughts, and I am thinking and I'm seeing what I'm thinking versus being lost in them. And to me, that was the moment when meditation started to feel different, is when I stopped.
Say that again.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That was really interesting.
So initially what happens is you're thinking and you're lost in your thoughts. And over time, what starts to happen is you're thinking, but you're observing your thoughts rather than being lost in them.
Yeah, the noticer. There's a book that Gina and I both have read and highly recommend for you guys. It's called The Surrender Experiment. Mm. Mickey Singer wrote it, and he also wrote what was the first book, Gina?
Untethered Soul.
Untethered Soul. And he talks about, it's so interesting, and his story is fascinating. And he's like a 1970s, like super hippie guru yoga dude that it's just, his story is fascinating. But he talks in the very beginning about noticing, like the noticer, that you're mm-hmm. like, yeah. you if you take time to notice, you can actually notice the chatter in your mind, like, oh my God, I forgot to talk to that person. Oh my God, I hate that person. I really don't want to call them. I need to buy bananas. Oh my God, my daughter's homework's not done. Oh, the dog needs a bath.
And he refers to it as the roommate in your brain.
That's so good.
In one of his books, it's like the roommate the roommate you need to kick out. Like the roommate that like keeps talking, and it's like, why do you allow that roommate to live there with you?
You know, and I notice, like, so especially in moments of stress, your listeners might find this as well. So let's say that the coping mechanism is I'm going to binge watch on Netflix for 8 hours in the evening. Yeah, me too. And so we plop down on the couch, we watch our 8 hours of Parks and Rec or whatever you're binge watching at the moment, and it's over and you feel no better, right? You're still tired, you're still stressed. And it's because the whole time we're binge watching, the back of our brain is having the exact same conversation it was having otherwise.
Yes.
It's still worrying about the bills and the groceries and the homework and the dog. And so the meditation practice gets to be this little gift, you know, over time. What you're going to notice is your brain does a thing, right? So my brain plans. When I meditate, I am always planning what's coming next. Like, do I have to write a talk? Do I have to respond to emails? Whatever it is.
Oh my goodness. So that's normal. Yeah. I thought I was like special.
Well, maybe you and me.
On the special bus.
And so, you know, when you're doing dishes, you're probably also planning. And when you're watching TV, you're probably also planning. And when you're getting ready for bed, you're also planning. But the
in the middle of my sleep, in the middle of my sleep, I'm planning.
But then, so now you know, right? So you have this little meditation practice and you know that you plan. So you might get to go, you know what? I'm just going to zone out in front of the TV right now and I'm not going to plan and stop it. You like get to build that little choice into your thinking.
Right. And that's one thing that I think is really an important point for our listeners to hear from you, Meryl, is that it's almost like another form of training yourself, the same way that if you start a new fitness program, let's call it, it's going to be tough at first, and it's going to take a little adjustment period for the habit to be formed so that the push-ups or the walking or the running or the whatever it is feels normal or like an uncomfortable normal. Cause even, you know, even when I work out and I love to work out, it still sucks a lot of the time. It's hard. So meditation, we might be able to, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that we can put it in the same category, that it takes some practice for it to feel kind of normal-ish. And then it still might suck sometimes, but we still come back to it because we know there's benefits there.
Yeah.
We find benefits.
That's a really good segue, because I wanted to ask you to talk about the benefits of meditation, because there are a lot of benefits and there's a lot of health benefits. And I think it's important because anxiety is at such an all-time high right now. Can you talk about the benefits of meditation?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. There are a lot of benefits to meditation, and studies have shown, you know, a lot of correlation between reducing stress, emotional well-being, you know, more ability to focus clearly. But the thing that really stands out to me the most, honestly, is improved resilience, meaning we learn that we're capable of handling the difficult moments in our lives and trust our ability to come back from them. And so what I've seen just in my own personal life and that of many of the students I've worked with is that skill is the one that people are like, oh my God, this is different. Right? Because we're able to face the really challenging moments in our lives with a different sense of engagement than we would have done previously.
And not need a cigarette.
Or maybe feel like you need a cigarette and know that you don't have to do it. Right? Because sometimes we're just like, God, I want that. And I'm just not going to do it.
Yeah. And it's definitely like, so going back to that escape thing, and a lot of people do this, and I used to too. I speak from great experiences. Like when you've had a really bad day and you're like, I'm going to go have a drink because that's going to take it away. And this is what they teach us in recovery is no matter how bad it is, if you go have the drink, whatever the problem is still going to be there in the morning. And in meditation, what I have found is that once you meditate and like calm your mind from the spinning freak out of whatever it is, because, you know, whatever the situation that's causing the spinning freak out, enough meditation and calmness of mind does actually sort of help the problem go away, where you're like, actually, it's not that big of a deal. I'm calmer now.
You know, in a lot of traditional meditation teachings, they talk about this teaching called the double arrow. And so the double arrow is, there's the thing that is creating your problem, the thing that is causing suffering for you, which is the first arrow, okay? And then the second arrow is the way you feel about the thing happening. And so we might not have any control over that first arrow, right? We cannot control the fact that there is a pandemic in this country right now. But we can control the way we are thinking, talking to ourselves about our reaction to that pandemic, right? And that one, the second one, is the one that actually creates the most suffering for us. And so it's this idea that the freedom comes because we can say, you know what? I'm just not going to beat myself up over this. Like, I lost my temper with my kid this morning, and it's a tough time. We're cooped up in the house together. I needed the space. So I'm going to say, I'm sorry. And I'm going to move on. And I'm not going to spend all day going, oh my God, I'm the worst mom. I shouldn't have done that, because that helps nobody. Right. And so the double arrow, that like the way we feel about the thing, that's the one that we have control over. And that's the one meditation can help us let go of a little bit.
It's like a combination of the surrender project experiment and radical forgiveness. Those two books, which we talk about a lot, is surrendering and forgiving.
We'll be sure to put all the links for these books in our show notes for you. So Meryl, what would you say to the person that's listening to us right now that is skeptical and like, I just, you know, I've never meditated. All the books point to meditation. Like the book I'm listening to probably the fifth time at least right now, Game Changers by Dave Asprey. He's the Bulletproof Coffee guy. And, you know, when he talks to these super high achievers, they all mention meditation as an important part of their lifestyle. So even with those statistics, there's people out there going, I don't know about this woo-woo shit. Like, so what would you tell someone who's a skeptic about just trying it and getting started?
So my very favorite quote in the world, which I'm going to paraphrase, is from Viktor Frankl, who is a Holocaust survivor and a psychotherapist. He wrote Man's Search for Meaning. And in that book, he wrote something along the lines of, between stimulus and response, there is a pause. And in the pause lies your freedom and your power. And when I read that, I thought, that's exactly what I'm doing with my meditation practice, right? Is I don't use meditation to be Zen or like be magically calm and never feel any pain or discomfort in my life. I use my meditation practice to let me be totally awake and present to my life. And so all that's happening, you know, I think the thing that people get hung up on is, I don't feel calm, or I don't feel Zen, or I don't feel any better at the end of my meditation practice. I just thought for 10 minutes. But what we're learning every time we do that is we're really learning the skill of how to be comfortable in discomfort, how to sit down for 10 minutes. And even though your brain is screaming, get up, go do something else, respond to that email right now instead, you're saying, no, I'm just going to sit here. I'm going to sit here even though I wish I could stop thinking and I can't. I'm going to sit here even though this is boring as shit and I want to get up. I'm not going to. I'm going to sit here and fall asleep. And every single time you do that, you're building this habit just to stay when things are uncomfortable. And normally what we do is we fly away, right? We're uncomfortable. And so our MO is to run around like a chicken with our head cut off and work harder and try more, or to numb out and lay on the couch and call in sick for the day. And instead, we're just going to say, no, I'm just going to be here for it. And it may, you know, within a matter of, honestly, I think weeks of a practice, 10 minutes a day, you'll notice a change.
Hey, hate to interrupt this amazing show, but just wanted to remind you guys, if you'd like to support this show and help us keep it the best it can possibly be, hop on over to patreon.com/warners, where you can leave us a tip if you like, and perhaps get some cool exclusive material.
Well, let's talk about that 10 minutes a day and getting started. What is some good ways to get started? And Keith also wanted to ask this question too, especially for men. And he said something about, for those who sit with their legs crossed, which is harder for men, he literally said this, and putting their fingers together and saying om. How are some ways to get started and get past the woo-woo perception? Yeah.
So meditation can be as woo-woo or as free of woo-woo as you want it to be, right? Like a mindfulness meditation practice is totally secular. I meditate either on my couch or in this moment when my kids are home in my bathroom because I can lock the door. But sit anywhere you feel comfortable, like actually your body feels comfortable. I usually say don't lie down only because it's so easy to fall asleep. So go sit on the couch or your armchair. Your legs can do whatever you need them to do to be comfy. Your hands can do whatever they need to do to be comfy. I just let mine rest on my lap. I close my eyes. And for a lot of people, if that feels scary, especially if you have like trauma in your background, just keep your eyes open. Just a soft gaze towards the ground is fine. And if it was me and I was just starting all over again, I would set a timer for 3 minutes. I would set a timer for 3 minutes and then just add a minute every week. You know, I think what I have found in my practice is it takes me a full 10 minutes to actually feel a difference, right? The first 9 minutes and 45 seconds is like active, busy thoughts. But by minute 10, I usually get a couple seconds of, oh, okay, I'm starting to feel like I'm stepping out of that being stuck in thought place, or I'm stepping out of that rapid fire panic thinking and I'm starting to slow down. And then the timer dings and you go on with your day.
And I know we're going to have you go through this with mm-hmm. Rachel and I. Selfishly, we both need some meditation today, and you're gonna walk us through a meditation for us in our post show, which will be available on our Patreon page. We have a new Patreon page, patreon.com/warners, where people can see the bonus footage. I think it'll be kind of fun trying to walk the through of it. I mean, we both meditate, but there are days when we are very hyper. I can't speak for Rachel, but I can speak for myself that my brain is on fire through meditation. I know that for me, I need a guided meditation in order to get into it. If I just try to do it on my own, it's a disaster. Can you talk a little bit about the difference between guided and unguided?
I think they're both awesome. And I think you could use guided meditations for the rest of your life and have an amazing meditation practice. So I think the key is to find a voice that resonates for you. There's some amazing apps out there. I love Headspace. I like Daily Calm. Both of them, I think, have really good guided meditations. And so I think they're beautiful because they just give you an anchor that's a little bit more clear than pay attention to your breath for 10 minutes. But some people find mm-hmm. after a little bit of guidance and they know kind of where their mind and their body's going, some people find they can just turn it off and sit in silence. And I think both are lovely.
Yeah, I kind of fluctuate between the two. Sometimes I need a voice to sort of take me away from my current scenario. You made a good point, Meryl, that you got to watch out so you don't get like an annoying voice. And then the whole time in the guided meditation, you're like, this bitch is annoying. But sometimes I'm just really tired of hearing people talk, because especially right now, all I do is talk on the phone and listen to people and try not to kill them. And sometimes I just really don't want to hear anything. I want silence. And so that's a really good place too. And that's just taken a long time for me to realize that. And you have to experiment too. I think that experimentation is.
Yeah, I think so too. You know, some people will go into that silent space and find that they really just get lost in their thoughts and don't even notice that they did that. And some people will find that it feels like a respite. So you just have to look for which one is the one that's giving you the best sense of, I can stay and do this.
What do you think about mantras? Because that's there's a really great series that Oprah does with Deepak Chopra often, like periodically. And he will...
I love his voice.
I love his voice too. I think that's why he's so daggone successful at his practice with the world. And but he uses mantras, and I find that real helpful. I don't really use that any other time because I haven't found any other guided meditations that have those mantras. But that I think the reason for that, and you probably know more than me, is he'll give this mantra that you basically repeat. And as you find that your mind is wandering off in whatever squirrel direction that it's going, that mantra sort of is what you bring back just to center yourself.
Yeah, you know, in all mm-hmm. traditions of meditation, the very first step is to come into presence, meaning to actually fully embody this present moment, which most of us never, ever, ever do, right? That's the reason we can like drive home from work and pull in the driveway and think, oh my God, did I stop at any of the red lights? Because we weren't actually present. We were 100 miles away thinking. And so when we practice coming to presence, we use what's called an anchor. That's why so many times when you meditate, you hear somebody say like, pay attention to your breath. The breath is an anchor. It's in the present moment. Mm-hmm. But you can also use a mantra as an anchor. You can use sound as an anchor. There are meditations where you stare at, you know, like a candle flame or a flower the whole time, and that image is the anchor. But you need something that's going to hold you right here, because otherwise your thoughts will carry you either forward or back, one of the two.
That's true. Can we talk a little bit about mm-hmm. mindfulness? Because I think that's another area that people find woo-woo. Especially in business, because I also, we'd like to talk about the work that you've done with businesses in meditation and mindfulness, but let's talk a little bit about mindfulness.
So mindfulness is usually defined as to be in the present moment without judgment and with compassion. So to be in the present moment without judgment and with compassion. And I think that that is like such a simple, clear, beneficial thing for all of us, especially in business, to have in our lives, right?
Can you repeat that one more time for some of our listeners? Yep.
So we are going to be in the present moment without judgment and with compassion. And so all that is to say, we're going to, you know, if I can like glean from your conversation earlier, Rachel, we're going to have a phone conversation or a Zoom call or something in this moment, and you're going to feel your irritation rise. And so to be in the present moment is going to be like, I am here and I feel this irritation rising. And for me, irritation starts like in the base of my belly. I know instantly, right? And I feel it rising up. My chest gets tight. My throat gets tight. I start to clench in my jaw. And I have been told I flare my nostrils out to the side. And this is my like little irritation look. And so being in the present moment is, I feel this irritation. And then the non-judgment is to go, I feel this irritation and I'm not going to come down on myself like, I'm a meditation teacher. I should never get irritated. Oh my God. Or I'm not going to come down in judgment as this other person is the worst person on the planet and I just like hate them so much. I'm never going to talk to them again. And you go on the whole spiral that way. And then the compassion is to come in and go, I'm doing the best I can do today on my 100th Zoom call of the day. And I have enough faith to say the person on the other end of the screen is doing the best they can do today, right? We're all just trying to get through it.
God. And it works every time, doesn't it? No. Oh, if you could only hear Rachel sometimes when she's having a bad day, the things that come out of
so
her mouth about what she says about people.
It's so bad. And, you know, crazy enough, I do. Well, here's a really good point. And it's just we're being real here. I can maintain the most professional front. And, you know, last night I had someone I was dealing with that really frustrated me, and I was curt and cordial, But I was still professional. So on the front side, we can still do that. But the damage that's done is that inside, I am screaming and dying for a cigarette. And so I think really what we're trying to get at here is how to not damage our own selves by putting that front up, but actually really honestly being able to have that compassion and be like, oh, I'm not very good at it, clearly. Ooh.
And let's add a layer to that. There are some of us who consider ourselves empaths. And while you're having that professional veneer, and you and I have experienced this with each other, and we can be real, even though we put that veneer on of like, okay, we can feel it.
Yeah.
We can feel it. You're being professional, but when like you're irritated with me, I can feel it like that because I can feel people and I can read people and I know when they're giving me bullshit and then I take it to heart even more. So even though like you're feeling it and beating yourself up inside, I am now beating myself up inside because I'm like, oh my God, Rachel's upset with me.
Well, and what's crazy about energy is that you can feel it from like Gina knows it from me over like a Facebook message.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Like from just the energy being put out into the world.
Yes.
And so obviously somebody that I'm on the phone with and I'm being like, is there anything else I can help you with? Like they know I want to kill them.
They can feel it.
Exactly.
They can feel it. Powerful. They can feel it even though they don't know it and they don't know what they're feeling. They can feel it and something feels off.
Yeah. They're like, I hate this.
And it's so easy to respond, not even knowing that you're responding to somebody else's energy. So all of a sudden you find yourself being a little snappish and curt or short, and you don't realize you're responding to the other person's energy. You've totally lost control of your own sense of like energetic boundary there.
Mm-hmm. I think I've caught myself sometimes in being mindful with myself where I'll be like, you know what? This is not the best time for me to have a conversation with you. Like I'll literally come out and say that to someone. I know I've said it to you, Rachel. Like probably not the best time for the, you know, never mind that I reached out to you because you know, this probably wasn't a good time. I'll feel it and all of a sudden realize it, but then I'll be transparent about it. Like I know I'm about to get really snarky. So I'm just going to back out and I'm going to put myself on a little time out.
That's a huge moment of mindfulness though, right? Because you just saved yourself one, 2 days of grief over an argument. And then should I call and apologize? Is she going to call and apologize? Who's going to apologize first? I don't know. Right?
Exactly. No, Rachel, you're good. You apologize. You do. Sometimes it takes a while, but you do.
It is the evolution of my spirit that I will lose my shit and threaten to chop you up with an axe. But then I'll be like, oh, I'm sorry. I needed to eat something.
You needed a Snickers.
I should keep Oreos like in my purse. No, for the record, I've never threatened to chop someone up with an axe.
Not out
loud. I just
want
to clear myself. I have thought about it, though.
There is a meditation teacher who is also a neuroscientist. He wrote a book called Buddha's Brain. And in this book, he outlines, I think it's 4 stages of, you know, awakening in a meditation practice. And so the first stage is, you know, you ask your partner to bring home a gallon of milk on their way home from work, and your partner walks in the door without the milk. And stage 1 is, I've never meditated before. I don't know what meditation is, whatever. I said, honey, get the milk. You didn't get the milk. We have a huge fight. Okay. And then stage 2 is you listen to this awesome podcast about meditation and thought, I'm going to start meditating. I totally get mindfulness. This sounds really good. Presence, non-judgment, compassion. Honey, will you get milk? And honey forgets the milk. And you have a huge fight. And afterwards, you're like, huh, I bet meditation would have helped. Maybe I should have meditated. And then the third stage is now you've been meditating a couple months. You've got like a little bit of a practice under your belt and you say, honey, can you get milk? And honey forgets the milk. And you feel that irritation rising up and you like want to scream and you grit your teeth and you bite it and choke it down and you go, okay, what are we going to do without milk? And in your head, you have the huge screaming fight and you're mad. And passive aggressive. That's stage 3. You're already super advanced at that point. And then stage four is you really have a meditation practice. Like, you don't miss many days. You do 10 minutes pretty much every day. You meditate. And eventually you say, honey, get the milk. And honey forgets the milk. And you go, okay, so what are we going to do instead? And the actual irritation itself just doesn't rise, because this is the truth of the moment. There's no milk. Like, why do we have to have a fight about it? There just is no milk.
The truth of the moment. So I was at stage three a couple nights ago with a certain someone that was watching my dogs, and I was waiting for those dogs to return to my home. Rachel was there for, so thank you for the stages. Now I understand. I'm getting there. Stage three. Okay. I can almost get to stage four.
You're close.
Well, and there's certain things. I think there's also some layers to that, Meryl, because like I've been married a few times, let's call it. And, you know, my current husband, who's wonderful, if I ask him to do something and he doesn't do it, then I'm at that stage with him and in my life that it's like I can do that and go, it's no, whatever. It's not a big deal. I really actually wanted you to get the milk, but, you know, whatever. Moving right along. But then there's other people, namely my ex, who can push my buttons and I will lose my shit so fast. So, I mean, clearly my practice is not consistently over all people, but, you know, in some, at some places we can reach that point maybe when we realize, okay, you know, I've been in and out of enough relationships to know that, okay, if I want this one to work, then I have to have that acceptance there. But, you know, we're all human, and over here where I'm not watching it carefully, oh God, here we go. Bring out the axe.
And you said it, we're all human, right? We're all human. And there are people who are going to get on our nerves, and there are going to be people who fundamentally we disagree with. And it's not about pretending that we love everybody and everything is perfect all the time. I mean, nothing about meditation says that's the case. But what it does say is, can we get through the day without actually taking an axe to anybody? Right? I mean, that's the truth of it is, can we notice that, wow, this person really pushes my buttons and this is a thing I'm really holding on to strongly? Not to say, oh God, I have to change, I'm so bad here, but just to notice, like, this is what's happening in this moment. This is the way I'm feeling.
Okay. So my takeaway from this so far is, can I start my day without taking an axe to anybody?
Can I get through my day?
Through my day without taking an axe?
To like
somebody?
If you say yes, then you just won, right? Like, totally
winning. Yeah.
All right. Now we have measurement. We have a measurement tool. So here's what's, you know, it's not just our personal lives, but there's also a lot of stress going on in the work environment and the work from home environment. And you've done work with companies and Fortune 500 companies. And, you know, there are companies that are like, woo, like, ooh, even for our practice as a training company, we use improv as a modality, and people are like, oh, comedy, laughter, we can't do that. So talk a little bit about the work that you do with companies and the benefits in business for meditation and mindfulness.
You know, I think the number one benefit that I see and that I have reported to me, I work with a lot of companies. Normally the way it happens, which I love, is I get to work top down. So I usually get to work with the executives, and once they start to see benefit, they start bringing it to their whole teams, which has been awesome because you have that top down buy-in, you know, so people take it a little more seriously. But the thing that I hear most frequently is that what it does is it allows people to be honest with themselves about how they're feeling in the middle of their workday. And it's not like, I don't want to make it sound like people are walking into the office like, oh, I'm having this really vulnerable day. I can't, you know, it's not that. But it is giving yourself the chance to go like, whoa, this is tough. I've got two kids screaming at me in the background. I'm trying to figure out how to take this conference call. My partner's taking a conference call at the same time. This is really stressful. And being able to be honest about that as you show up, even if you still have to show up for the call exactly as it is, not changing a thing, but you have the sense to be fully present and embodied in yourself, meaning you're not like flying out of your head, freaking out, but you're actually inside your body saying, this feels intense. I feel anger rising up because that's my response to stress. And know that you can just show up holding that. It allows people to be more present and engage in a way that isn't, you know, you're not engaging from the place of anger, even though you might feel anger in that moment, if that makes sense, right? So if you're showing up with a boatload of stress on your back, your normal response, my normal response is one of anger when I'm feeling super stressed out. So I'm really quick to fly off the handle about something that otherwise I might not. But if I know, damn, I'm stressed out right now and my response is anger, I'm not going to let that come out. I'm going to sit with it instead. It gives me a different way to engage with my coworkers.
Yeah, sounds a little bit like teaching people to pause so they can respond rather than react, because I think that happens a lot in business and in all relationships. Is something happens, we react, and meditation can help us to pause. That pause you were talking about earlier, Meryl, that and pause, evaluate how you're feeling and what the outcome will be to the correct response, or a response that maybe not would be the correct one or the one you want to give, but a better response than a reaction.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
How have you managed to convince companies and executives to invite this into their world, to work with you and to use meditation as a practice in the business world? You know, how do you get past that? Because I'm sure we may have other, you know, meditation practitioners listening to this and they have tried to get into the corporate arena and can't. So how do you convince people to do that?
It is really tough. And I, you know, as I was thinking on this question, I have to tell you, I don't know that I've ever actually convinced anybody to do this that didn't want to. And so what has ended up happening over time is by either word of mouth or by one client inviting somebody to join one day, and then a new client is born from that relationship. But it's, you know, meditation, you cannot sell meditation. It is a hard, slightly boring practice, right? It is uncomfortable to sit with yourself. And if you don't want to do it, you're not going to do it. I get it. Right? You have to be ready to show up and sit down amidst complete discomfort sometimes. And so it's, you know, this has been the busiest I have ever been, I will tell you, is in this moment. It's the first time I ever have had people like banging down the door. Normally I have a nice handful of clients and it kind of grows on its own, but this has been the first time that I'm really having to juggle a lot, because this moment I think feels so overwhelming for people that they're really looking for anything that might help them.
So that's interesting. So they're reaching out to you based on having heard about you or someone's done this before, and all of a sudden they're like, we're running out of things to do.
Yeah.
What do we do?
Yeah, that's exactly it. They're looking for ways to help their team manage working from home. You know, I think the amount of stress that people are under, you just can't hide it. You know, it's not the normal, I'm going to drive into the office and leave everything at home and then I'll come home and deal with it later. You're just in the midst of it. You can't get rid of it.
Well, and I also selfishly was asking you that because from the modality that we use in organizations for training, that's always for us, it's hard to sell improv as a thing that solves a problem. And really the best way has always been word of mouth. Someone gets a taste of it, they try it out, and then they see the benefit. They have to experience the benefit to understand it. So thanks for sharing that, because I know that's a tough sell, but good for you that this could be a whole new world, because maybe the world will start to become more mindful and look at meditation.
I really hope so. I mean, there's nothing I love more than introducing this practice at a company and then having an employee email me and be like, oh, this totally changed my day. Thank you. That is huge to have that sense that somebody now realizes they're in control of their emotional experience.
Yeah.
Huge.
Well, before we wrap up the show and we go on to the post show where we get to meditate with you, and I think Doug's going to join us for some meditation too so that he can maybe teach Keith later. Let's talk a little bit for a couple minutes about fear and uncertainty. I listened to one of your most recent episodes of your podcast. What are you seeing and what advice can you give on dealing with fear. There's a lot of fear right now of what's going on. And but when we were on the break, when you had an internet problem, you're talking about some people have a lot of fear and some people are like surrendering. So let's talk about fear and uncertainty in meditation.
Yeah. So this is definitely a moment that is bringing out a lot of fear for people for a myriad of reasons. But the biggest reason is it's a moment that feels completely out of our control. None of us have lived through this before. So none of us have any guess as to what this might look like in a week, in a month, in a year. And that sense, you know, we all, I think, live our lives with such a misconception that we're in control. And we do a lot to make sure that we feel like we're in control. So when we get thrown into these moments, whether they're huge moments like a pandemic or a really small moment like a shitty email from your boss and you like subtly feel, you know, your work might be jeopardized, whether it's a big or a small moment, those moments that threaten our sense of control tend to trigger fear in us. And the fear response is whatever our coping mechanisms are. So some of us cope with some with like a very physical escape, which could be online shopping, binge watching TV, drugs, alcohol. It could be losing yourself in a book or going for a walk. You know, some of them are super benign, some not as benign, but all of them are some form of escape. Another way that we try to grasp control, this one's really strong right now for many of us, is our beliefs. So a lot of us will grasp hold of what we think is right in this moment and everybody else is wrong and don't you dare talk to me otherwise I will stand on my soapbox and yell for hours, right?
There's a little of that going on, I noticed.
Yeah, just a little, right? And whether it's a belief as a coping mechanism or a physical escape as a coping mechanism, all of those little things, right or wrong, are trying to give us some sort of ground to stand on. I'm going to stand here and I'm going to be safe because I'm doing this thing or I'm believing this thing. And unfortunately, what happens is that thing ends up becoming its own little prison. Because God forbid we go 1 minute without that belief right next to us, or God forbid we go through 1 minute without our coping mechanism within grasp. Freedom feels terrifying. Our practice, meditation practice, reminds us that freedom is not about resisting fear. It's not about becoming impervious to fear, but our meditation practice is about learning how to be open and comfortable with our fear. And so that's why I think in this moment, meditation is such an amazing tool, because we're scared out of our minds. And instead of trying to fix it or hide it, what if you just said, okay, I'm scared and I'm going to sit down and feel it for 5 minutes before I have to go deal with the next thing on my day. It makes a big difference.
I learned in recovery a while back, one of my sponsors taught me that whatever feeling you're feeling is not going to kill you. And, you know, in recovery, especially from drugs or alcohol, taking that drink and taking that path that you know is bad for you, that could actually kill you. But sitting down and feeling my feelings, no matter how intense, it's not going to kill me. And that was a huge revelation. Like, it's so uncomfortable, as you've said a bunch of times, like, it's so uncomfortable to feel something, especially as awful as fear, even if it's a fear of just like, I just don't understand what I'm supposed to think, but it's not going to kill us, that thinking about and feeling it.
Yeah. And I just want to say, because, you know, we have no idea who's listening, right? And if you have a background with some trauma in your life, it's not to jeopardize the intensity of what you're feeling. And it's not to say that some people really also need support to feel what they're feeling. Mm. So if you decide, I want to embark on a meditation practice and it's super intense, like you feel like you can't control the intensity, then find a mental health practitioner that works with meditation, right? Because sometimes we really just need the support to feel what we're feeling, especially if it's triggering, you know, this moment can be triggering so many other fears. And if that's happening for somebody that's listening right now, just know, you know, it's easy for us to sit here and say, feel what you're feeling. And I mean, feel what you're feeling because you're fucking annoyed. You have two kids and a dog and a house that's on fire while you're trying to work. I don't mean you've got a background of trauma and you feel like you're about to have an emotional collapse.
Yeah. Really good point.
I recently went through that in the past couple of weeks, and you know, Rachel and I are big into therapy, and I didn't even realize I was having a trigger until I got on my regular call with my therapist. But I was triggered because my anemia returned during this COVID stuff. And we don't know why, but we think it's stress related. But I literally was triggered by it coming back that I had a meltdown and couldn't understand. And what I was doing was flashing back to when I first became anemic and had to have a transfusion in the hospital and how that, like, literally that fear was so traumatizing coming back, that the combination of talking through it, journaling it, and meditating on it, that combination is what got me past it.
I am a huge cheerleader for therapy. I think everybody should have a therapist. It's especially in this moment. Whew.
Amen. Well, it's looking like it's time for us to wrap up, because we really just want private time with you. Because we want to meditate. So we're going to wrap up the show, Warners. We're going to wrap up the show. We're going to end the show. And then we're going to continue on privately with Meryl and do some meditation. But you'll be able to access that. You can go to our Patreon page, patreon.com/Warners, and you'll be able to actually find that exclusive footage. So if you're someone who you're like, oh, I just really struggle with meditation, how can I do it? I don't know how to do it. This will be an opportunity to see two very type A personalities be talked through it. Even though we already do it, we can certainly do it better. So before we get to that, Meryl, if people want to reach out to you, what is the best way to do that?
My website is Meryl Arnett. It's Meryl like Meryl Streep, M-E-R-Y-L, Arnett.com. And you can find my podcast, The Mindful Minute, anywhere you get podcasts.
Awesome. Oh, and you know what I forgot? I forgot our signature questions. Rachel, do you want to ask a couple of those?
Yes.
Yeah, we can't miss those. Somehow I missed those. I was in a meditative state.
Since this is the podcast that makes business sexy again, how do you define the word sexy, Meryl?
Ooh, well, you know, what comes to mind, honestly, is somebody who really fully embodies themselves in the moment. And so I think if I was thinking about how do I make business sexy again, I think it would be some, you know, for me, it would be being completely in my body and in the moment that I'm doing whatever it is I do, like meditating.
It is sexy.
There you have it, folks. Meditation can be sexy.
Totally sexy.
Have it. What is the best advice that you've ever been given by another woman or a man?
The best advice I've ever been given by another woman was to trust what I hear inside, which sounds super woo-woo, I know. But, you know, I also am super type A. And as I said before, you know, when I meditated or did anything, really, it was so in my brain. It was very intellectual. It was very thought-filled. And so then to say, for somebody to say to me, like, trust your gut or trust your instinct, I felt like I didn't even know what that was. And so when somebody said it to me and I was able to really hear it and listen to it, I realized I have a gut and an instinct and I can listen to them.
And lastly, any advice you wish you had been given?
I wish I had been told much earlier that what you feel in your body really matters. Yeah, I mean, I know that's sort of simple, but it's for me at least, I was completely disconnected from feeling in my body. Yeah.
So listen to your body unless it's telling you to go get cigarettes.
Or really, how about, like, honestly, even listen under that. Yeah, right?
Right.
Because there's something under the cigarette thing, right?
And that is what and at least I have enough presence and I have practiced enough and had enough therapy to be the witness to the fact that that's not really what's going on. And what can I do to better manage the stress that's causing me to want to do something destructive?
Yeah. You know, so along the lines of listen to yourself, I get so many people who talk about like, well, I'm trying to meditate, but some days I just like, I really need to go for a walk, or I really need a glass of wine in the bathtub, or there's just something else I needed to do other than sit for 10 minutes. And I totally understand the need to do those things. And I think that listening to ourselves really means asking the tough questions, because sometimes our body knows really well how to get out of the uncomfortable thing and do something that's just a little bit more comfortable, but still kind of good for you. And the truth is, if you're going to meditate, you got to sit down. You got to sit down and be still. We don't meditate when we run. We don't meditate in the bathtub. I'm so sorry. It's literally sitting still somewhere for however long you set the timer for and staying the whole time.
Debunking some of our male counterparts who said, I meditate when I run.
Oh, I hear that every day. You don't. Keith, I'm sorry. Walters. You might be meditative. You can totally be meditative, but you're not meditating.
And you're getting in the zone. You're getting in the zone.
Yes.
And sometimes getting in the zone shuts off the chatty voice.
Mm-hmm.
But so what you're saying is that it's different.
It's different because, you know, you're in the flow. You're in this one thing and maybe you're quiet, but are you still embodied, right? So meditation is really truly about being in your actual body, like from the throat down. So are you feeling what happens in your heart, what happens in your belly? I know that sounds woo-woo, but there's shit happening there. And when we know it, we're able to better respond to it.
She has spoken.
Damn it. Sorry.
Awesome. Well, again, it has been so great having you on Women Your Mother Warned You About. Thank you so much. We will have information about you in our show notes. People can reach out to you, and we're excited. We're going to soon get to a little bit of a practice with you, but it's time, Warners, for us to wrap up the show today. Thanks to everyone who has listened today. To connect with me directly, Gina Tremarco, you can visit our website, womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com or ginatremarco.com. And for Rachel?
To connect with me, you can find me all over the web and social media as The Singing Lender and thesingingLender.com. And you can find all our social media links, including one way to get to Keith Walters, at womenyourmotherwarnedyouabout.com.
And hey, if you like the show, you can give it a rating and review, which we would love you to do. But more importantly, share the show, especially this episode on meditation and mindfulness, because you probably need it. You probably don't think you need it, but you probably need it. Or maybe you have a boss who needs it. So share the show with someone else. And keep on keeping it sexy. Remember, for the best relationships, keep it real, raw, and relevant.
And a little irreverence doesn't hurt either.
Hi, Warners.
This really will get serious soon.
Yeah, it doesn't have to. I don't think anybody wants it to be serious.
Women Your Mother Warned You About is a Pod About It production. You've got a great idea. Let's pod about it. Visit podaboutit.com for more information.
Woof, woof, monkey, monkey.